This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2017, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 4.
All right. Well, we're starting early, but hey, that gives us five more minutes. I'll probably use it somewhere along the line. My name is Sharon Martin, and I am incredibly honored that you chose to spend this hour with me today. I was envisioning a class of about 20 when I was preparing this, so this is a little larger, but that's fantastic. What we're doing today will work. So thank you for coming. I've been teaching a while, I guess is how you might say it, and yet I find myself constantly trying out new things, constantly embracing new ideas. The rubric is something that I don't know. Actually, I kind of do. I'm thinking back 10 years ago. I probably didn't use it a lot in my grading practice. Probably about the 10-year mark, because I know because I switched schools at that mark, and I kind of remember changing some of my practices there at that point. So this has probably been something that I've been incorporating for the last 10 years, but still growing in it myself as well. So if you are here today, and the root term rubric was new to you until you saw it on the list of workshops, stand and cheer as loud as you can. Woo! Yeah! Awesome! Super! Okay, that's fabulous! Okay. Thank you. And I hope that just relaxed everyone else, too. And if there's the rest of you, if you have some knowledge of rubrics and you're just dying to cheer as well, go ahead. Okay. I knew there was some. There's someone out there that's feeling left out. There really is. Okay. How many of you? Another question. If you were in school, in a high school or college situation, and your instructors have used rubrics, okay, you know it from a student perspective. You understand rubrics. Show me your hands. Okay. Good. Fabulous. As students, did you like rubrics? By the way, if you still have no framework for what we're talking about, go to the last page of your... I'm going to give you a definition in a moment, but you'll see a very simple one. This is a simple fourth grade for a persuasive... the first time they were doing a persuasive essay, okay? Talk to me a little bit. Those of you who used rubrics as students... Why did you like it? Two definitions there that are on the screen. Come.
You knew what you did wrong.
You knew what you did wrong. You knew, and I like to say it from the positive perspective, you knew what to improve, how to improve, what to change next time. Okay? So, yes, absolutely. Good.
If they gave you a rubric,
excellent. Thank you. It's more than just a grading tool. It's a tool, if used ahead of time, it's a tool to guide your work as well. That's where I think I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but I think I'm only about 3 years into doing well with that. Okay. So, If you're new to this, you're not that far behind. It's become really, really big in the last 15 years, okay? But you can still be cutting edge if you start using this in your classrooms. And we're there again. If that happens again, just, you know, flash me. warn me. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. I've been trained not to look at my PowerPoint, but eventually, sometimes it does get you in trouble. But you know, nobody really likes
this kind of presenting, right? Okay. There, now you got a teacher tip as well today. Okay, good. What else? Why do you like them as students? Okay. Now, let's narrow it down even one step further. How many of you use them already as teachers, and you're just kind of here for it? Good. Excellent. All right. So why do you like them as teachers? Very good. Were you all able to hear that? Because she said it so well that it did not, to repeat it would be redundant. Okay. Good. Anyone else?
It's a lot easier for me to fairly score everyone's assignments with a rubric. Before I started using them, I had such a hard time scoring writing assignments and figuring out if I was taking equal points off for the same error.
So subjectivity. Okay. We, as teachers, we all understand that there's a certain amount of, well, let's just face it, there is a certain amount of subjectivity in a lot of the things that we grade, okay? But if we can find ways to significantly reduce that subjectivity so that what I experienced with Johnny today in the classroom, he really, really tried my patience, okay? Now, I'm grading his essay at night, okay? Is that going to impact, you know, how I'm feeling about Johnny tonight? Oh, he's just this horrible student. Okay, C, C minus, D, F. Okay. Meanwhile, what am I grading? My attitude? Okay. It probably deserves an F, right? So if I can find ways that I can kind of push some of that aside and really assess this work for what it is, because, you know, what is your philosophy of assessment? What are you assessing? You know, are you assessing that student's behavior for the last 10 years, or 10 minutes, or 10 days? Or are you assessing the product, okay? So I think if we're going to be, if our assessments are going to be valid, then it has to be an assessment of the product, not an assessment of our attitude toward the student. All right, so you've had a little bit of a chance to look at these definitions. If you're a multitasker. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary simply says that a rubric is a guide listing specific criteria for grading or scoring academic papers, projects, or tests. I like Susan M. Brookhart's definition, and she writes a pretty good book on rubrics. She says, a rubric is a coherent set of criteria for students' work that includes descriptions of levels of performance quality on the criteria. So if you look at the rubric on the back of your handout, down the side, you see the coherent set of criteria, okay? So this rubric, this essay is going to be graded on organization. It's going to be graded on the body. Does it have a three main points? It's going to be graded on style. And it's going to be graded on mechanics, grammar, and spelling, okay? So that's the criteria for this very simple rubric. Across, you have the descriptions of the levels of performance, okay? So you have level 4, level 3, level 2, and level 1. And ideally, you know, your students are hopefully functioning in the 3-4 range. And if they're not, then we know where we have to keep working. So that's how that definition plays out, because sometimes you can look at words and they don't have a lot of meaning until you see it. I was going to say one more thing there, but I don't remember what it was. Maybe if I went to my notes, it would actually help. Okay, questions about the definition? Just what is a rubric? How are we all doing with our going from zero to, okay, now I get what we're talking about. Comfort level. Give me some. Yeah, nod works good. Something, thumbs up. All right, okay. So now, we already talked a little bit about this. So when do I want to use it? Well, anytime there's an element of subjectivity. Hopefully we can avoid a little bit of this teacher's dilemma
This is actually not the frame of mind that you want to go into marking with, okay? Whether they get a 7.45 or a 7.6 is not going to matter in the overall scheme of things if you have a decent amount of grades in your grade book, you know. So don't get hung up on the details, folks, okay? A rubric will help you to do that well. And then anytime we have performances or products where there's subjectivity. So this can range oral speaking, writing projects, art projects, physical education skills, work habits. I don't know if some of you, we use them a lot in our shop and home ec program because there's a lot of products, performance, work habits that are going on there. So there's a wide variety beyond the English classroom. Okay, now I am an English teacher. So some of my examples will probably, you know, gear toward the English range. But please understand that this goes far beyond just papers. And in fact, for some of those other areas, they're just as essential. We hit on this just briefly, the why, when I talked to a few of you from your perspective as teachers and students. But let me just kind of give this to you in a little bit of an organized way. I think that the rubric is both a tool for formative assessment and summative assessment. Now, if you were in my class yesterday, you heard those terms. Let me start with formative assessment. Formative assessment is assessment for learning. So this is the assessment that I'm doing as a teacher to check for understanding. I want to know what a student already knows, what they've mastered, what they haven't mastered, so I know what to teach next, what I need to reteach. Yes, the curriculum might tell me what I should teach the next day, but if my students aren't ready for what the curriculum says I should teach the next day, then to be a master of my curriculum is not to be a teacher. It's to be a, I don't know, puppet, okay? So we as teachers need to be doing formative assessment all the time. It is the most important assessment that you do. We think the summative assessment is the most important assessment because we feel important when we put a grade in the grade book, okay? It's a mark of authority, right? You know, but that's not the most important assessment that you're doing. The most important assessment you're doing every day is your formative assessment. And rubrics are not just useful for summative assessment. They're also useful for formative assessment. Why? Well, a couple of reasons. If a student is allowed to see on a first draft, you know, if they hand you in a first draft of a research paper, and you do a quick rubric grade without actually giving them a grade. You just show them. So if I was doing this as a formative assessment, there would definitely not be any numbers along the side. Okay? If you look on the back page, you saw the numbers along the side. So those numbers are there if I feel like I need to actually get a percentage. All right? But if I don't need a percentage, if this is formative assessment, I'm just checking off the rubric, giving it back to the student and say, okay, these are the things you want to work on for your next draft, all right? Or the student can use it himself for a self-assessment. So if they have the rubric, you could require them to hand in a draft with their own assessment. Something that I do sometimes is... they've had the rubric, probably, when they got the assignment. Sometimes I'll only give them the rubric after they've written a first draft, because sometimes I find that, depending how detailed the rubric can be, it can sometimes stifle creativity. You have to watch that a little bit. Now, the examples that I'm giving you are not too detailed, okay? So you won't have to worry about that. But you do have to watch that a little bit. There are some dangers. So sometimes I'll only give it to them after they've done a first draft. Sometimes we'll create a rubric together as a class after we've established what a good paper is, and then we'll talk together about the criteria. okay? And we'll write the rubric in class together. Another thing I've done is on the day the paper's due, I hand them out another rubric. They have to assess their own work. This works particularly well at a junior high level where they don't love revising and editing. At least my junior high students don't. If you have junior high students that do, I want to talk to you. Please tell me everything you know about how you've made your junior high students love revising and editing. But so what I do then is I might have them, they think they're handing it in that day. Okay, I've told them that their papers are due today. And then, instead of collecting the papers, I hand them out a rubric. And now they have to read their papers over again and assess them by the rubric. And then, so you know, if you've changed your mind and you don't like what you're handing in today, you may take it home tonight and give it one more round. And I've had some actually really good success with that. Now, you kind of have to, it works particularly well if you don't do it too often, because then they're like, oh, they just feel like they were given this huge gift, and it's kind of a, I can do even better. So it kind of, the surprise element works a little bit with that, but it can be motivating for them. So peer assessment is another way that I like to use rubrics. So we can bring our papers in, get together in groups of three or four, and discuss them or exchange with a friend, and then, you know, discuss, okay, I think this paper, so someone might read the paper, and probably the person whose paper it is will be there sitting in the group, okay? So you have to create a safe environment where it's okay to do this. And then you simply talk as a group. Yeah, I think this actually would be a level, you know, 2 or level 3. And you could make it better by doing this. Oftentimes, peer assessment works better if it's more than just two people exchanging. Okay, so you get a little bit. But you can't have too big a group. 3 is probably about ideal. But 4 can work as well. So that's another tool for how rubrics can be used in formative assessment. Questions? Okay, so now this is where you thought we were going, okay? It's also a tool for summative assessment. This is our grading, okay? This is, yes, we do need to record some grades in the grade book. Now, philosophically, I'm almost at a place where I'd like to get away with throw out the grade books, but you didn't hear me say that. I didn't actually say that out loud, but I'm closer there than I ever dreamed I would be. But if only we could make it about the love of learning and not about the grades. But do I have any friends in here on that one? Okay, good. I didn't completely alienate the whole world by saying that. So what does summative assessment, what do rubrics do in summative assessment? Well, it gives transparency and consistency to your marking. So we already talked about that. You folks mentioned that I can explain to parents why I'm doing what I'm doing, okay? I saw one, I didn't put it up here, but I saw one comic strip of two parents at a parent-teacher conference talking with the teacher. And the mom is looking over the paper and says, "What do you mean he got C- on his report? I was up all night marking that. I was up all night writing that thing." Okay. So, you know, sometimes we need a way to be able, it gives us a way to explain your B, your C. This is a C because, and you have specific reasons. So transparency and consistency. And then it saves grading time, okay? Believe me, it is true, okay? Yes, it takes time to mark the to create the rubric. But when the rubric is created, and especially if you do it pre even giving the assignment, there is this great sense of emotional satisfaction that comes in when you have that stack of papers to grade. Because
all of us hate doing things that we don't know how to do or things that we're not going to do well. And so, full transparency here, when I'm given an assignment and I have not created a rubric and I don't know how I'm going to assess it, it comes in. Guess what happens to it? I'm not Dina Swanson, if you were in her class yesterday. I don't grade it that night. No, no, no. It sits because I'm feeling scared of that pile of papers because I don't know what to do with it. Do you identify? Yeah, of course. Well, then we defeat so many steps along the process because students need immediate feedback, okay? And they're not going to be able to grow and change and improve unless they get that immediate feedback, all right? And so, if you're an English teacher like I am, and you don't always get it all spaced out perfectly, you don't manage the 24-hour turnaround that Dina Swanson does, okay? That's nice. Trust me. If you manage that, I salute you. But if you can get a 72-hour turnaround for general papers or for really big papers, a week turnaround, at least your high school students are going to be happy with that, and they're going to feel like you've done, you know, a good job and given it your best effort. So if you were feeling a little overwhelmed, like I was with that 24-hour turnaround time, just breathe, okay? That's great, okay? I salute that, but it can work as well. But this 2-3 week turnaround time, just because we're scared of a set of papers, no. You dare not, okay, and call yourself a teacher, all right? Because you aren't really, yeah, you're getting a grade, but even summative assessments should be formative, most of them, except maybe that final exam that you hand in and walk out the door and never see your teacher again after you do it, okay? But everything else should have a level of formative assessment attached to it. So give them some turnaround, a decent turnaround time. And if you've got a tool, you know how to grade. If I've got the rubric prepared, I'll often have it already printed. When I gave them a copy of it, I printed an extra set for myself. And now I've collected my papers. Here's my rubric. Let the fun times begin. Grab a coffee. Go to a coffee shop. It's an excuse to treat yourself, maybe even a Starbucks if you're doing really long papers. And just have a good time. Come. You do this. I mean, you turn the music. You got to create environment. Grading just isn't that much fun. So you got to make it. Make it a nice experience. It also conveys effective feedback. We already kind of talked about that. We talked about this. It minimizes marking complaints from your students and your parents. Okay. And I think that was the last of the why. Anyone want to add anything to the whys or have questions about the whys? And we're going to get to the practical here in a moment.
So you would adjust your rubric for every assignment that you gave, or would you stand
up?
No,
not necessarily. So we'll get into this a little bit more with the house. But like if I was teaching a persuasive essay, the same rubric would probably work for a, you know, multiple times that I teach a persuasive essay, okay? But a persuasive essay rubric would look different than an informative essay rubric. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So after you've done enough, you just have enough unless you've made up ready, you just go
to the... Right. So, yeah, exactly. You start collecting documents of these on your computer, and you start saying, okay, I can use this overlaps, this overlaps, this overlaps. I just need to change this line. So yes, it becomes easier the more of these you create. And you also learn the language so that it becomes easier and easier to write your own rubrics and fill in those descriptions. Okay? But I'm gonna give you some practical hands-on experience with this.
Start out and you're really detailed in your, you know, till you get to the number of 15, 16, you're sick of it, so you just start marking letters.
Right.
Your rubric will help you be more fair.
Exactly. Because you can give effective feedback with minimal, without having to write, you know, paragraphs. Okay? Now, I like, especially if it's paper that they have put significant time into, I still like to write some personal comment. Okay? They've invested personally. They want me to communicate back to them. So, but my communication back to them is going to be more in the form of the content of the paper, because that's what they really want interaction on. Okay? And the form of it can be communicated largely through the rubric. So now I have time to dialogue on some of the content and fun stuff and give some feedback there that's detailed and specific to them. But
is that how you do? Okay, so looking at maybe you have a student that works harder to get a 2 than a student that works harder to get a 4. I mean, then another student that gets a 4.
Okay, so I guess that's a good question. But if our assessments are valid and reliable, are we assessing how hard they're working? And if that's what you assess in your school, then you could give the student who works harder for a 2 a 4 because we don't actually assess content and performance, we assess how hard someone works. But I ask you, can you ever be really valid in your assessment if you're assessing how hard a person's working? Well, no. Because I can't get inside you. I really actually don't know. So I would say if your assessment is going to be actually valid, you have to mark the product, not how hard you think the person works. Was that too harsh? I know we like to. Not everyone's going to get a 4, and that's okay. That's okay. For some students, and in fact, in Ontario, we do some things right in Ontario. In Ontario, levels 3 on our rubrics, and I have an Ontario rubric that I'll show you, because I am now trying to write mine based on Ontario standards. Not because I have to, my school is not monitored by the province, but because I think there are some really good things that they're initiating, so I just kind of try to meet some of those standards. One of the things that we do in Ontario is level 3 is meets expectations, and level 4 is exceeds expectations. Okay, so a level 3 is actually what I'm expecting. Now this rubric that's on the back sheet, I would say level 4 is kind of meeting expectations. But then, in Ontario, see, and this is going to blow some of your minds, but meeting expectations is a C. A C student meets expectations, okay? A's and B's, those are for, you don't hand them out too freely, okay? You know your system, okay? If you gave your students C's and told the parents that they were meeting expectations, that you would have a riot on your hands. Okay, so I'm not trying to change the whole American education system. Don't get me wrong, but just so you understand, does that help you understand that I think the rubric really needs to record honestly the performance. Now, if you have another rubric, you could have a category on the rubric that talks about effort. You know, if that is a part of your philosophy assessment, that effort becomes a part of the grading component, well, then you can include that in your rubric, and there you get to record the effort. So there they get a 4. And maybe the student who got level 4s and everything just kind of did it, but maybe he gets a 2. Okay? But I think it belongs in its own category. Someone had a hand up over here.
I was just going to, is there ways that you can write your rubric in such a way that it's not like, oh, this was written, you know, perfectly? Is there a way to write, to lay out your rubric that gives a little forgiveness there? for that kind of levels the playing field a little bit for, you know, students that just naturally do really well at it and students that would struggle more with some of the finer points. Does that have something to do with how much weight you give to certain...
Probably. And I think it also has something to do with maybe rethinking that maybe a level three is actually meeting my expectations, and maybe level four is just going above and beyond, where you motivate people. Even if your level three is, instead of being a 70, 79, your level three is, you know, a 90. But, you know, that level four, now these are the additional flashy things, you know. So I think there is.
Okay, good stuff. We're going to move into the practical, because I want us today to have a little bit of work with creating a rubric, and then also with assessing using one. So for those of you that have never tried that, we're going to try it and then discuss together, because I think that this could be a really beneficial tool for us as teachers to do regularly, all right? To look at a piece of work and a rubric and then have to defend our explanation, you know, for how it met the criteria or how it doesn't meet the criteria. And if you teach in large schools that have, you know, multiple grade 12 English classes, you know, this is what they will sit around and do so that they're fairly marking their work and being compatible in how they're assessing achievement. Most of us don't have that luxury, all right, because we don't have that many people that are doing the exact same thing that we're doing, that we have to work together on it. But so we're going to try that a little bit here today. So how? The first thing you need is an adequate assignment. So what's an adequate assignment? If you're going to assess with a rubric, I think an adequate assignment should most of the time be a written, detailed, relevant, content-driven assignment. And I'll explain GRASPS in a moment. But if you write out the assignment, what you have just made yourself think about what your expectations are going to be for this assignment. You have also communicated that to the student. You've communicated that to all of your students, even the one that was sick that day. You have a record to go back to. You know, when you give that oral assignment and the student says, "But you said..." How many of you? Yeah, okay. because our memories are faulty. Okay, and maybe we did say something we didn't intend to say, or maybe they heard something we didn't say. So written, detailed, relevant, and content-driven. I think one way to achieve that is the GRASPS model. It's not the only way. I'm just throwing out one way. So if I have one on your handout, because that's too small print, so I put it all on your handout, and that way you have it to go home with you as well. So the GRASPS model, GRASPS is an acronym for goal, role, audience, situation, and then the P stands for product or performance, and S for standards. So in this assignment, it's a high school English class, probably about a grade 10 class, and the goal of this assignment is to make the language in Hamlet approachable for a 7th grade English class. So really, what I'm going to ask them to do is to paraphrase, okay? But to make it relevant, I've given them a role so that they don't just feel like they're in school, oh, we have to do this, paraphrase. No, okay. You today are an editor at a major publishing house, and you've been asked to produce an edition of Hamlet that 7th grade students will enjoy. Okay, now, hasn't that assignment just become a lot more fun than being told to paraphrase to be or not to be? Yeah, of course. Okay, so now it's clear It's relevant. I give them an audience so that they know who they're writing for, because whenever you're writing, you have to think about your audience. And so their audience is already stated within that, seventh grade students. It's a little bit redundant writing it out here, but you know, you get the point. The situation, you'll need to take a portion of Hamlet and paraphrase it so that a student from seventh grade could understand the text with minimal assistance. All right? And the product, it's already been clear, it's already embedded. I would never write this out like this, okay? But you can see how this model kind of hits, make sure you hit everything. So you'll create a paraphrase of a portion of Hamlet. And then the standards, I'm expecting that the paraphrase is going to be a minimum of 100 lines. They get to choose the section of the text they want to use, but it should be a minimum of 100 lines. It's going to contain all the ideas presented in the original, because that's what a paraphrase does. It maintains the voice and tone of the original. It follows the traditional rules of grammar, spelling, and paragraphing. And it should be understood by an average seventh grader. And then I tell them that most local newspapers are written at a seventh grade reading level. So this is just to give them a context for what a seventh grade reading level is. Okay? Now, when I have completed that assignment development, I now know exactly what my criteria are for my rubric, right? So in your little group of four that you found earlier, or create one now, go to the page of your handout that says, try your hand at rubric creation. And down the side here, write what you think should be, based on these standards, the five criteria. Okay? Now, if your answers aren't exactly like the answer key, that's okay. There's not really an answer key. But based on those standards now, you should be able to come up with five criteria that you're going to be looking for when you grade. So go talk about it. Groups of four or three or whatever works for you.
Right now, we're establishing establishing our recognized criteria is not to be necessarily the same as the criteria that exists.
It took a little bit, but I think most of you were wrestling with it. I think some of you a little bit were hung up on, but the criteria is always going to be the same. No, this criteria along the side is going to change with just about every assignment. There'll be overlaps, okay? But for this assignment, yeah, there's a significant overlap. If you look at the standards, I want them to follow the traditional rules of grammar, spelling, and paragraphing, okay? So there's a mechanics standard. All right. So definitely, that's one of your criteria. Now, this is just a personal preference, but that one never goes at the top on my paper. Because even though I'm an English teacher, it's important, but it's kind of important on every assignment. It's not unique to that assignment. So my mechanics is often closer, you know, to the bottom if I have a rubric like this. Also, this is also personal preference. I really like it. So I'm going to tell you my personal preference so that you do it too. I really like having the highest expectation, the first thing they read. You will see some rubrics created and it'll be completely flipped. No. I want them to see that highest expectation, to read that first. Okay, to everybody striving for that. So I always work 4-3-2-1. All right. Another little bit of an opinion thing, but there's research that says this: to develop your scoring levels, in even numbers rather than odds. Any ideas why it's actually better to use even four rather than just three just levels? Well, it's too easy on three to just check the middle one. Okay. Oh, just four actually forces you to make that decision. All right. If you just have three to choose from, oh, I'll just go down the middle. Okay. So that's the research shows that rubrics that have four levels are more objective than ones that just have three. All right. Okay, so let's go back to our criteria. So you had a mechanics criteria. What else did you come up with based on those standards? Now, if you wrote this assignment, you can have different standards. You can have different criteria. But based on these standards, what are the criteria going to be on the rubric? Yes. So based on the second one there, and you could have combined this in different ways, but contains all the ideas presented in the original. So that's a content criteria or a quality criteria. Yeah, you can call it whatever you want, but basically we're going to head here in the direction of making sure it's a paraphrase and not a summary. Okay, good. What else? Length. Yes.
I have a question. Some teachers, the way that they do it is that you get graded according to how much you did, even if you didn't complete the whole thing. But what if you did assign that certain amount? What do you do when you told them a specific amount that they actually need to do and they fail to do that?
So, again, I think that my assessment is more valid if I give them a grade based on the content of what they did do versus all or nothing. So they didn't make it to 100 lines, they get a zero. Well, is that really a true reflection of what their work and abilities are? Okay, so based on validity, I would make the argument that even though this assignment, an ideal assignment, a perfect assignment, has 100 plus lines or whatever, a lesser quality assignment will have fewer lines. Does that resonate with you?
So you would do a 4 for having 100 lines.
So my 4, actually, and I have... You can pick up my sample on the way out if you're just dying to know what I did with this. It's just one example, okay? But my 4 is paraphrased 100 or more significant lines from the original text. Now, I don't throw that on them on the day that they get their rubric back graded. They've seen that ahead of time. They know that to get a level 4, they actually have to choose significant lines, all right? To get a level 3, they have, I don't know, like 90 lines or whatever. And to get a level 2, you know, 70 lines. A level 1, less than 70, whatever. I mean, those numbers, that's your judgment call based on, you know, your philosophy of assessment and you knowing your students, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? Okay, so we've got length. We've got quality or content. We have mechanics and structure. We need two more. What would you say are the last two criteria based on the standards?
Clarity and ease of reading.
So, yes, reading level, absolutely, is there, which ease of reading or reading level. Did they achieve that seventh grade reading level I was asking them to achieve? Good. And then did you put clarity as a separate one? Or did you? Okay, that's fine. Yes, clarity, ease of reading. I called it reading level, but it's all good. You call it what makes sense to you, okay? Yeah, the voice and the tone. I just called it voice and tone for my criteria, okay? Now, do do you see how that, now that you have the answers, you see that they were right there, right? You just had to pluck them out, okay? Once you've written yourself a good assignment, you've also done the hard work of writing your rubric, okay? Then we're ready to do the tedious work of deciding how the developing and describing the scoring levels. So now you got to go through and write, okay, what does a 4 look like? What does a 3 look like? Right, what does a 2 look like? You know, and it is a little tedious. Okay, I'm going to show you a website in a moment that is a cheater starter version to get you going. Okay, that does some of this for you. Not necessarily, okay. Although it probably would be a good idea to, okay. I'm critiquing that myself and going, yeah, that probably would have been a good idea. Let me get to that. So now if you need a grade from this for your grade book, you're going to have some way to turn this rubric score into a grade. Well, I think one of the easiest way is to just decide what weight each of the criteria is going to get, okay? And again, this is very much a judgment call, okay? For this assignment, I think my judgment was the quality or the content was weighted times 2, and everything else was weighted times 1, okay? So then you had what essentially comes out to out of 24, okay? So this was an assignment that had 24 points in it. All right. Now there's multiple ways of doing this. I am throwing up one way. Okay. There are other ways to do it that work, but this is one simple way that I have found to give some fairly fair grades while you're assessing. But you got to make it work for you and for your system and what your community believes is an A versus a B, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. The system that I use actually now with Ontario ones, I don't do the weighting. I mark everything up and then I look over the paper and depends where the most of the lines fall or the averaging, I'm like, okay, this is an A paper, this is a B paper, this is a C paper. Okay, so it's much more of an eyeballing after I look at my whole rubric than actually giving them numbers. But I know that my American friends aren't always comfortable with that. So so hence the numbers on the side. All right. And now you're ready to grade. Okay, you've established your performance criteria. We're jumping ahead. I would have liked to have, you know, make you wrestle through writing some of those because it is a really good exercise. But for sake of time, let's go to the back page. Yes. So this depends on, I think my 4 is that it would not only be understandable for a grade 7 student, but it would also be enjoyable, okay? And then the 3 was understandable. The 2 was most of it would be understandable. There were some problems. And 1 is, you know, it wasn't at a 7th grade level. If you are curious beyond can't help yourself, you may pick up the answer key after the end. Answer key was in quotes because, again, you're the teacher. You decide. Okay? Go to the back page. We got to get here. This is a 4th grade paper. This is a student paper.
I typed it up exactly like they gave it to me, okay? There's not typos on this paper. This is the student's work, all right? I want you to very quickly read it over. So read your rubric first, okay? Read your rubric, then read the paper, and mark it, okay? So you've got about 3 minutes to do this assessment. Go. Okay. If you're wrapping up, I see some of you are. Defend your choices. Compare and defend your choices with your partners, and then we'll talk collectively about it. But there's some discussion that will arise. I chose a paper that was there's a little bit of controversy that can arise from it. Okay, I could have given you an A paper, but those are easy to grade. All right, the ones that are just all perfect. All right, so there's a few things. So talk about this. Remember, it's fourth grade. Okay, go. Some of you are high school teachers and are like, oh. Okay, put yourself in fourth grade mode. Okay, we probably should have had about another 5 minutes for this. I apologize. But you had such good questions throughout, so it's okay. We used it other places. But this is a fun exercise. You can call your teacher friends over, and this is what you can So teacher friends do on Saturday, Friday nights for their entertainment. Might not be a bad idea, but no, we don't. But it might be more productive than some of the ramp sessions we have on Friday night. So, how's that? Okay. What did you do? What kind of mark did the student get? How many of you ended up in the 17 to 20 range? Okay, how many of you never got to the point of giving him a mark? You didn't quite get that far, okay. How many of you, he ended up into the 20 to 24 range? On the low end of that, okay. How many of you ended up with less than 17? Okay, I think there's an argument that can be made for each of those answers, okay. So you see, we haven't removed subjectivity completely. We've reduced it, but we haven't removed it completely. We still have to make judgment calls as teachers, and that's okay. We are the teacher. That's your job, okay? So, for example, in grammar and spelling, whether he fell into the 6 out of 10 or 11 out of 15 really comes down to what rules he knows about the comma, okay? And even some words that maybe you wouldn't expect him to know how to spell, but if he can spell it right in one place, he can probably spell it right in another place, okay? So he used a great word, mimic, but I'm pretty sure if I'm right, it's spelled right in one place and wrong in another place? Yes. Okay? So that's a signal that there was carelessness going on there. Okay? The organization, so this is the first time they're really writing an essay with an introduction, body, and conclusion, a 3-paragraph. Did they nail that? Yes, absolutely. Okay? They get their 8 points for that, in my opinion. Okay. Did they have distinct arguments? Well, yeah. Okay. Again, this may come down a little bit to what your expectations are of fourth grade. Okay. So someone who's actually teaching fourth grade might be better at this than I am. Okay. But I look at this and I say, well, a parent would remind me to do stuff, a reminder. That's one specific thing. He serves as a reminder. And then he can scare off burglars, okay? Which, come on, you did appreciate this, didn't you? this was a kid in my school. I loved it. It was so awesome, okay? And then, but a parent could also be a big help. Well, scaring off burglars is also a help. Reminding you to do stuff is also a help, right? So you see how that third one, although in his specific example, it kind of broadens, his topic sentence wasn't really 3 distinct points, okay? So I probably would have docked that student there for that,
So if he would have said, instead a parent would help me with my work, it would have given it a little different.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now, there's a good chance that I might have pointed that out to a student while they were already doing their first draft. Okay? So we would have taken care of that problem, maybe, before we got to the final draft. But again, if there were so many other things to work on, maybe not. Okay? Because they improved it in other areas. Does that give you just a little bit of an idea for how to go about using this?
We are out of time, but I end with treats. Rubistar.org. Now, please, 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 before you go to Rubistar.org, you have to create your assignment. You have to decide your criteria. Okay? Don't go there before you've made it to that step. Okay? Might it help you along the way to come up with some of your descriptions? Yes. But please, please establish what your performance criteria is. Otherwise, you'll be influenced too much by Rubistar and you will no longer be the teacher. Okay? So now you get to create, we're going to create today a rubric that's a product. You've got choices here of oral projects, multimedia, math, etc. I am going to choose a... where was the one I wanted? Building a structure. Under science, building a structure. Okay. And it won't let me go any further until I put in my name. And this assignment was to create a bridge. And I'm an international visitor, so I just put in 99999. And I just want a temporary rubric, okay? Now, when I click on this first one, a whole bunch of options are going to pop up. I need to choose the ones that are based on the criteria that I've already decided on before I came here, okay? So I had decided that for this rubric, I am going to be... grading it on the plan, the scientific knowledge that this bridge construction shows. I'm not a science teacher, so I don't actually know what I would be grading it on, but the modification and testing, these sounded good to me. the function of the bridge and the journal log content. Now, sometimes you won't find what you're looking for. So you're going to have to create that line. That's okay. It's pretty easy to create one line or two lines. Okay? This was a miracle today. We found everything I was looking for. Rubistar knew what I needed. I hit submit. There it is. Okay? Now, I can import it into an Excel document by downloading it. And then I can make changes. So I come to this one, and the scientific knowledge description says that explanations by all group members indicate a clear and accurate understanding. I'm not grading them as a group. I'm grading them as individuals. How many of you like being graded as a group? Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's okay, but if we're looking for validity, probably you should be grading an individual student's work. So I'm going to make changes to that line, okay? To make it my rubric along the way. So please, 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 the longer you do this, I don't know when I've last gone to Rubistar for a rubric, okay? But it's there to get you started. Does that make sense? But don't realize that it's a tool, but still think like a teacher before you use it. Does that make sense? I hope you have something. I'm sorry, I am 4 minutes over time. If you want extra treats, the answer key, quote unquote, that was kind of sarcastic, is for the Hamlet assignment. On the other side, I have what an Ontario rubric actually looks like. We are supposed to group it into categories of knowledge and understanding, thinking, communication, and application. And that takes it to a whole new level. So think about that.
Some of you are ready to move there. Go with that. If you're looking for grading scales for things like class participation or oral reading assessment, they're not as good as rubrics, but they're better than nothing. So I have some samples of grading scales here as well. If these are treats you want, help yourself. And works this. Go. Quickly. My bad.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.